The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome into Students of the Game. My name is Alex Bauman, and it's awesome to join your co-host here, Nathan Gladwell and Gray Oldenburg. Guys, we had AA this past weekend. We had some college basketball news that Nathan is probably not too keen about. We'll get into all that here. Start off with the Alabama 8A game. Nathan, you being the big Bama fan here, what are some takeaways you had from the game after Saturday?
Well, we went ahead and looked at some of the positions that we might have had concerns with. I think what we really discussed with the offensive line to begin with the amount of changes happening, of course, you know, Kane Proctor leaving, and then he's coming back, but Summer and Rowley, so we didn't get to see any of him. And just having to see how the whole line was going to function, especially with having a new center in place. I thought Brockmeyer did fantastic. And I know Brailsworth, he didn't play at all. Honestly, I don't know the whole issue with him. But for what Brockmeyer was able to do, I felt like the offensive line really excelled in the run blocking. Mainly, that's all what happened at A-Day was ran the ball again and really got to see some really impressive things from the running back room, especially with Jam Miller and Justice Haynes. I was impressed with them. But got to give the offensive line a lot of credit. I thought that they worked to the second level well. Their gap control was very, very well. And I don't know if this is just them being better than the defensive line or if the defensive line was going at a 75% speed or something like that. But they definitely looked better. Pass protection, I thought, was good for the most part. I think there were little times where it was kind of laziness. And that's just with the defense kind of being more on the civil side. There's no blitz schemes or anything like that to go against. So you really don't know how well the offensive line is going to perform until you start seeing these blitz schemes. But for the most part, I think you got to give them credit for the way they played. And then, of course, the running back room, they just had a day for running the ball. They were all over the place. Jay Miller just looked like running back number one out there. He ran the ball extremely well, and we got to see a lot of guys. And then you look at the quarterback position. Jalen Milroe, he was only 3 for 9, but he had 100 yards. Most of his completions just coming through big pass plays, and that was good to see, but you still realize that he struggles a little bit with some of the shorter throws, which has been a concern for a while. He kind of found a favorite target in Jeremy Bernard, the transfer from Washington, who looks like he could be a wide receiver number one. He had himself a day. I think overall, the most impressive quarterback to me throughout the day was Ty Simpson. The reads he made, the passes he made, he looked like he was very comfortable in the pocket. He ended up going 7 for 12, 102 yards to the air. So I thought that was pretty cool. And then Dylan Rongren came in 8 for 12, 67 yards. And then what we saw of Austin Mack, we didn't get to see a lot, but he kind of struggled for a little bit. But I would say after watching the quarterback room, I think it's pretty stacked. And I think the gap between Jalen Milroe and Ty Simpson for that number one spot is actually pretty close, and it's more close than a lot of people think. And moving over to the defensive side, I think this was the side we kind of struggled the most on, and bro, I can't evaluate them super well because of the simple schemes we ran. But like I said, the defensive line, I felt like they struggled with gap control. A lot of the offensive line was able to work to the second level on running plays because they didn't hold gaps well. And then there wasn't a lot of pressure getting to the quarterback, but also it's 8A, so you can't really expect them to go ahead and get full speed and actually hurt your starting quarterback. So I can't really just be totally against what they were able to do. I just saw some little things that they should work on. Moving to the linebackers, I felt like there's a little bit over pursuit on run plays, especially over the top. It felt like it gave some big runs in situations where they should have played more discipline and stayed home. I think that's a struggle. I think you're kind of looking to make big plays out there, and that comes with a price. It's a calculated risk, and you do that. It doesn't always work out. There were multiple times that happened, and we gave a big runs. And then the secondary just looked like they were struggling, especially when we were running zone at times. I felt like people were out of position. And when it came to man, wide receivers kind of took over, which we had our whole defensive back room is different. It's a little younger, so the development for it is very important. And they're still learning how to play. But good news for them. They're playing against some of the best people to do it. So hopefully they'll be ready by fall.
Great. Any thoughts from an outsider's perspective on the Crimson Tide?
Yeah, I was a bit surprised. Obviously, it's hard to evaluate a team, especially with a new coach and coming in the spring game. It's so hard to see what Kalen DeBoer is actually going to do, especially as an offensive scheme. And just by basically a scrimmage against what he's been doing the past 3 weeks. So it is hard to evaluate. I thought the offense played very well. I think they're going to be a little bit more well-balanced when it gets to the fall. You trust in Jalen Milroe, you trust in Ty Simpson, whoever that number one guy is. It's all about Kalen DeBoer's system in the offense. I was very surprised and impressed with the way that the offensive line played. I felt like they dominated the line of scrimmage against the defensive line, which, again, you could think that's a really good thing. You could worry about the defensive line. I don't think you should think about that either way, except you're excited that the offensive line has shown the ability to do that, because Alabama's got talent all over the field, especially on the defensive end. My worry is in the defensive backfield. They're very young. They're very inexperienced. You lose Terrion Arnold, you lose Kool-Aid, you lose Caleb Downs, and a lot of freshmen are going to be asked to step up. A lot of guys who haven't played a lot of snaps at high level football are going to be asked to step up in that defensive backfield. Look, they're extremely talented. They're going to be able to do it. It's just about developing those guys, getting to those guys in the right spots, the right positions, and making sure they know the scheme, no matter who, because it's going to be all about matchups for those guys. So I would be impressed. I would be excited as an Alabama fan, and looking forward to the fall.
Yeah, just reiterate what y'all both said. The offensive line, we pointed out last week, that was going to look like it was going to be a sore spot for this team going into the fall. But what we saw at A-Day, I was pretty inspired by it, considering that Caden Proctor didn't even play at left tackle. You had Jaden Roberts dealing with somewhat of an injury. He did play a little bit in the A-Day game, but limited snaps. Obviously, Brailsford didn't play, and you had Brockmeyer step up. But I think everybody at the offensive line played really well on that first unit. The second unit, I was just not impressed with at all. It felt like a lot of the time, Simpson, Lonergan, Mack, whoever it was, really did not have that much time in the pocket. So I was a little bit worried about that second unit. Hopefully they can address that, whether that be in the portal or working with those guys in the spring, summer, and going into the fall. The running back room, very stacked. I was once again impressed with that unit. Jam Miller, really versatile back, whether they be running the football or catching passes out of the backfield. Saw flashes of that last season. Justice Haynes, I mean, dude's a stud. Daniel Hill got some viable reps. You had Richard Young as well. So I think the running back room is pretty shored up. No need to go into the portal or do anything about that, because I think it's one of the most stacked rooms you've had in a minute. The receivers, outside of Jeremy Bernard and a couple caught passes from Caleb Odom, was not extremely impressed with. There were a lot of drop passes. I thought Cole Adams, who is not even on my radar going into the game, played better at the receiver position than I was expecting. So that's good to see. But the receiver position as a whole, I know Ryan Williams wasn't there. A little bit of an issue going into the fall if they cannot catch passes. Jalen Milroe, I think, even though, like Nathan pointed out, he was 3 for 9, he did struggle a little bit with intermediate passes and the short passes. But we did see a change throwing motion from him that I think helped him deliver passes on a dot. You saw that Jeremy Bernard pass for what was, I think, 52 yards. It was very pretty. So if we can see his improvement going forward in the passing game, good things will be happening for this offense. Flip over to the defense. Although the second team defense played better than the first team defense, maybe that's just because the second team was going against the second team offensive line, who I pointed out wasn't that great. But you saw guys like Red Morgan, James Smith, You guys saw some linebackers like Jeremiah Alexander step up. So I think the second unit with some of the younger guys, the future is pretty bright there. And Trey Kirkpatrick at the corner position, I thought was a lot better than what he was coming in as a three-star recruit. So while that the second unit was very young in that regard, I thought they played really well, and I'm excited to see what they do going forward. But that defense, the defensive line has got to get better. Like Nathan pointed out, there was almost zero gap control. The running game was just dominating. And while that might be just because it's A-Day and they're not going 100%, not wanting to hurt these star players on the offensive end, that might be the thing there. But if this team plays like this throughout the season, it's going to be another thing like last year where the defensive line was giving up huge running games to all these teams. And then secondary, young players, I'm assuming Kalen DeBoer, he said he will address that in the portal, hopefully. So we'll see what happens there. And then lastly, with the special teams, obviously Will Reichert's not there anymore. Did not see any kicker separate themselves from the pack, whether it was Connor Talty, Upton Bellefont, or Reed Schuback. None of those guys really separated themselves, and we were leaving the game like, oh, yep, that's the next kicker at Alabama. And with our sore experiences as an Alabama fan with a kicker outside of Will Reichert, who has been was one of the best kickers in Alabama history, if not the best one, it's going to be hard to replace him. And I don't know if that kicker is on the roster right now. Hopefully he is, because we know all about these kickers and these big moments missing field goals. All right, transitioning over to some college basketball here. We talked about last week, John Calipari leaving Kentucky to take the Arkansas head coaching job. Y'all had mentioned Scott Drew was the guy I wanted to get that Kentucky job. He declined it. Billion Donovan was also a name. He said he wanted to stick in the NBA. We also mentioned Nate Oates had declined the job already. And they land on the BYU coach here. Mark Pope takes the job. He was part of the Kentucky's 1996 national championship team, and he was the BYU coach. I mentioned it in passing last week, and y'all both sort of said, nah, it's not going to happen. And it almost ends up happening here, guys. What are y'all's thoughts on Kentucky going out and hiring Mark Pope instead of getting one of these big name coaches that they're rumored to be in the play for?
There's two ways to think about this. Number one, look, he was a successful coach at BYU. Mm-hmm. He's proven that he could get a team that probably doesn't belong in the tournament to the tournament. He went to Kentucky, was a great player for Kentucky. So it's like, you know, alma mater's calling. You've got to think Kentucky have to have higher standards than that. That's ridiculous, Kentucky. I know that they had like 20,000 people at their press conference, and now they're all excited about him, but you're Kentucky. You had a chance to go get a national championship winning coach in Scott Drew, or a former national championship coach and current pro coach in Billy Donovan, or somebody else. Who knows? Go get a more up-and-comer coach. But they go
Bruce Pearl's on the market.
Mark Pope, why you?
Such a great mention.
Him is hey, Stephen Pearl. He's an up and comer.
Yeah, I'm not getting Stephen Pearl. This blew me away. I couldn't stop laughing when it was happening. I think Kentucky is on the downslope. Y'all can quote me on that all you want. And I think Kentucky has firmly placed themselves in a second to third tier SEC basketball school now.
Sorry, recovering from the whole Bruce Pearl fiasco we just had there. I look at this from a Kentucky perspective. You lose a coach in Calipari going to Arkansas, which for me, it looks like he was kind of forced out by Kentucky, which would make sense given that they didn't have the type of success they wanted to have. And it felt like Kentucky, once they found out that their job wasn't so coveted like they thought it would be, started scrambling around. And we kind of highlighted this on last week's show with the denial of interest from guys like Dan Hurley and Nate Oates and Billy Donovan and Scott Drew now, which it kind of set off alarms for them, I think. And you kind of start scrambling around trying to see who will be the next head coach at Kentucky. And while that's all happening, you're losing all these recruits. They're getting out of their letter of intent and stuff like that. And then you have guys entering the transfer portal. You're kind of losing your team and your fan base is getting antsy. So what do? You go and hire a Kentucky guy, because that's going to seem like you have everything under control. Like you're going to have the Kentucky brand back to what it should be. But let's be honest here. This is Mark Pope. If you watch what he did at BYU, they shot the three ball well. They didn't play defense well, which is kind of resembling of what Kentucky did this past year. But they went into this year's tournament and they lost to 11 seed Duquesne. He hasn't won a NCAA tournament game. He is 0-2 in that matter. And while I think that Mark Pope had BYU as a decently competitive team in this year's Big 12, I felt like they were very poor in some aspects of the game. For Mark Pope to come into the SEC as it is right now, Kentucky will get slapped around if they do not find things out quick. Both schools in the state of Alabama have things under control. Arkansas with Calipari will be a lot better at recruiting and attacking the transfer portal that will be there. And the number of recruits coming in for different schools around the nation. And while that's all going on, you have Kentucky absolutely bleeding from the chest right now because they got stabbed when Calipari left. And I'm sorry, as I've gone through today, Boogie Flan, he said he's out. I saw Aaron Bradshaw go ahead and transfer to Ohio State. DJ Wagner entered the portal. So you have all these guys jumping ship, and Kentucky's just losing blood and blood and blood. So what it has to happen for Kentucky to actually be able to compete next year? Mark Pope is going to have to meet with a bunch of these guys that Calipari recruited originally, and he's going to have to say that things will not change all that much. And for all we know, that's not going to be the thing that happens. Mark Pope's going to completely change what he wants Kentucky to look like. So it's going to be a completely different look for Kentucky next year, I think. And if I'm a Kentucky fan, I'm a little nervous for things upcoming because it's definitely going to be a huge change.
Yeah. I mean, this is an absolute settle for a head coach if I've ever seen one. I mean, you start out with Dan Hurley and you somehow work your way all the way down to BYU coach Mark Pope, who lost to Duquesne in the NCAA tournament this year. And then the next round, Duquesne absolutely got obliterated. I mean, the game wasn't even close. So I don't know how much of a downfall you have to go from just, okay, we're going to get Dan Hurley. Oh, no, we're going to get Nate Oates. Oh, we're going to get Scott Drew. Maybe we get Billy Donovan. Nah. No, you know, Mark Pope, that's it. I hope he does well for Kentucky fans' sake, but the dude has never won a conference title. He didn't win it when he was at Utah Valley, didn't win it when he was at BYU. I know they were in the Big 12 last season, and that was a little bit of a difficult job to win that conference. But when you can't win the Utah Valley conference, or win the conference when you're at Utah Valley, a little bit worrisome, especially when you're going to come into the SEC with the likes of Nate Oates, Bruce Pearl, John Calipari. You're going to have Todd Golden at Florida, who I think is doing really good things. Missouri, I think they had a down year, but the previous year, they proved that they could do good things. South Carolina, they're on the up and up. I mean, so there's all these teams with these good coaches and on the up and up, and now you have Kentucky with Mark Pope.
Down they go.
If you look at his recruits at his time at BYU, they were not anything special. And I know it's BYU, and you're not going to go get five-star Boogie Flan to come to your school. And Kentucky's going to have the lure of it's a blue blood. But I think last year he had 2 3-star recruits commit to his school, and that was it. So it's just a bad look for Kentucky to land on Mark Pope. And I know, they're like Gray pointed out, there are all these fans here at the press conference and in the arena celebrating the hiring. And there's reports that all these donors are donating money for Pope to use with the portal and stuff like that. But
he's a hype man.
It's just such a step down. And hope, like I said, hopefully it turns out to be good for this school. He has the connections. He played there. But as of right now, looking at it just on the blank canvas, it's not good. Any thoughts on what they're going to do with all these players leaving? Nathan and I both pointed out Boogie Flans leaving. They also lost 5-star center Jaden. I don't even want to try to pronounce it. It's White Quintancy. I don't know.
I think that was pretty close.
Yeah. Carter Knox and then Samoto Cyril all had one out of the letter of intent to the school. Then you got DJ Wagner, Aaron Bradshaw, Thierro, Big Z all in the portal, and then Edwards and Dillingham in the draft. And as of right now, obviously Reed Shepard still hasn't announced if he's going to the draft or he's coming back.
He should go to the draft.
There are reports that he's trying to get some NIL deal to come back and play basketball for Mark Pope. I think Pope played with Reed Shepard's dad. You have Onyinso, who's still on the roster, Jordan Brooks, and you have two freshmen that are still undecided if they're going to come to Kentucky or not, that being Travis Perry and Billy Richmond. But you read those names, and outside of really Shepard and Onyinso, not a lot of experience there. What can Mark Pope do to get this roster back to somewhat competitiveness in the SEC and not end up like Missouri did last year?
Well, you're talking about Kentucky. Kentucky had the number two ranked class coming in before Calipari left. I mean, the only class that was better coming into this upcoming season was Duke's. And Duke's gotten, you know, five top 10.
Well, Rutgers is pretty good.
Ridiculous. Yes. The loss of these freshmen, the incoming freshmen, Flan, Knox, both the centers with the very hard names to pronounce. That's the problem. You know, players are going to transfer away. The players releasing their national letter of intent is a problem, because that means Mark Pope is not doing what he needs to do to retain the success that Kentucky has brought in. And the success that Kentucky's brought in has been, oh, we're going to go out and we're going to get the players that we want. We're going to go out and get the talent, because that's what we do at Kentucky. You know, success on the court or not, or in the tournament or not, they've always had unbelievable talent and have been able to put players in the NBA. Kentucky's losing what they're, you know, have been successful at, especially in the recent years when they haven't been so successful in the tournament in March. He's got to fix that. He's got to cut that off as soon as possible. He's got to, you know, recruit his tail off. It's just so hard to see the success of this. I don't really know what he's got to do besides, like, you got to bring in talent, because if you bring in those kids that you brought into BYU and try and compete at Kentucky in the SEC, you will get run out of the gym.
I don't know, that Jackson Robbins kid's pretty good. He was on BYU. He's like the only reason they were even in that Duquesne game, but everybody else.
So I do have a solution for Mr. Mark Pope. And Kentucky fans aren't going to like this. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to preface this, because this is not their idea of a blue bloods way to compete. But you kind of have to do something similar to what Natives does and attack the transfer portal and pull these good mid-major players from their schools and get them to come to your school to compete. You look at Mark Sears, came from Ohio, was not recruited highly, but he did fantastic things at Ohio. Natives brought him in, and he just averaged 20 in the SEC and took his team to a Final Four. You talk about Aaron Estrada and what he was able to do. Started at St. Peter's. I know he went to Oregon, and then he went back to Hofstra, and the Natives pulled him, and he did a phenomenal job last year. So guys like that, getting guys like that out of the portal, while they don't seem like these big gets at the time, they can really improve your team and they can compete, and they'll be hungry to compete because they have never been able to be in that situation before. And to finally get recognized at that level of talent, I'm sure will put them in a different mode to compete. But that's not what Kentucky fans want. I'm going to go ahead and say that. I know that's not what they want. They want to go ahead and just go ahead and get their 5-stars in, and they want to develop them for a year. watch them play and try to take them to a national championship, and then they'll see them on their way to the NBA draft. But that's just not going to happen at this current point in time. And if you want to compete right now, that's what you're going to have to do. And Mark Pope has a limited amount of time to go ahead and get things ready. Because things are going to start ramping up quick. The offseason goes by fast. And before you know it, you're going to have to be playing basketball again.
Also, to Nathan's point there, those guys in those mid-majors, they're experienced. You know, a lot of those guys who are in the transfer portal and are looking to increase their viewership or visibility, I guess, in terms of national coverage and going and playing for a blue blood will do that. They're juniors and seniors. They're trying to get to the pros. They're trying to have a chance to play in the NCAA tournament, which gets them in a good position to the NBA draft. So going out and getting experienced guys is huge as well out of the transfer portal, because I mean, he's got to put something together quickly.
Yeah. I mean, you think about the most successful Kentucky players that they've had for the past few years. It's been Antonio Reeves and then Oscar Tshiebwe, both guys that were there until their final year of eligibility. Mm-hmm. I think Oscar Tshiebwe might have left a year early, but they were older players. And honestly, I know Nathan said this isn't something Kentucky fans want to do, is get people out of the portal. Well, I think all Kentucky fans want right now is to get past the first weekend of March Madness, because they haven't done that the past few years. I mean, they haven't. They've lost to what? St. Peter's. They lost to Oakland. And there's a couple other bad losses in there. They just don't have it. It's like Alabama with Avery Johnson. We were like, can we please just get out of the first weekend of March Madness?
And we were more concerned with even making it, Alex. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, that last year was Norfolk's sake. That was another issue, but
please don't bring that up again. We're past that. We are so far past that.
But yeah, I think if Mark Pope, I know you lose, you don't want to see yourself lose 5-star players and some highly recruited guys like Carter Knox and Cyril. But if you can go out and get the big name transfers, whether they be a mid-major or they're transferring from another Power 5 school, that'll be a big deal. But I don't know what Mark Pope, I don't know if his experience with the portal is, didn't seem to have that greatest success at BYU. Like I pointed out earlier, it's BYU. This is Kentucky. Two completely different animals here. So hopefully he finds success there. He's got the backing behind him. But this is going to be a roller coaster ride for Kentucky going forward. Great. Moving on to Auburn basketball here. Dylan Carwell last week announced his return for his final season. And then it was announced, we were kind of touching on it last week, it was between Pegues and Miles Rice. Well, Pegues announced he's transferring to Auburn. What are your thoughts on getting Carwell back and then now having Pegues come in and fill that guard spot?
Yeah, getting Carwell back, that was expected. I think the pull from him going to, I know he wants to go play professional basketball in Israel. When his career at Auburn is over, that was the pull away from Auburn after his senior year this past year. But it sounds like he wants to, this guy just loves playing at Auburn, loves being in Auburn. He's already graduated. He just wants to be here and to play. He's coming back, understanding that he'll be the backup center whether Jani Broome comes back or not. I think if Broome comes back, you just retain your front court, and then if not, you go out and start looking at transfer big man and see what you can do to pair alongside Carwell and Chaney Johnson and those guys in the front court. But it's good. It's big. Like he's an experienced guy, very, very good rim protector, super athletic. He's not going to do anything crazy. He's not going to score a lot. He's not going to get 10 rebounds a game, but he's going to do the little things. And that's what you need, especially on a team that wants to compete, late in the season. You need experienced guys, not just in the starting lineup, but to come off the bench as well. And man, getting JP Pegues, that is huge. We talked about it on last week's show. I thought it was Pegues, unless Pegues wanted to wait until after the dead period. And they wanted to, have their opportunity with Miles Rice. It seems like Pegues was the number one choice. And Pegues had a great visit when he came and visited 2 weeks ago and decided to make that decision. We saw the first domino was Pegues canceling his visit to Florida. which he had scheduled for this last week, this past weekend, and then Miles Rice canceling his visit to Auburn. It sounded like that was a done deal with Pegues, and then Pegues committed the next day. But this is an experienced guy. He is the guy to lead this Auburn offense at the point guard position. He is the Jared Harper that you've missed on Aiden Holloway, that you've missed with, you're not going to get with Trey Donaldson. You weren't going to get with Javon McCormick. He is the Jared Harper. He is the Sharif Cooper. He is the guy to lead the offense. He's an unbelievable shooter, shot the ball 36% from three-point land last year, averaged 18 points. He's not, too small. One of Harper and Cooper's problems were they were a little small, 5'11", 5'10", 6 foot, but had really long arms. Pegues is 6'1", you could argue he's 6'2", very experienced in the big games. He's played teams like Arkansas. He's played teams like Clemson and South Carolina. He's played these Power Five schools. Furman's never going to be shy to schedule these big games. Obviously, his shot against Virginia in the NCAA tournament, everybody remembers that. Especially Auburn fans, we love Virginia. And
good old Kyle guy.
And, what I just realized yesterday, Auburn actually had a secret scrimmage. These teams are allowed to have secret scrimmages in the fall prior. They had a secret scrimmage against Furman last year before the season started. And it was, all we heard from it was Auburn won. They, Jai Broome dominated. Saw really good things for Denver Jones, yada, yada, yada. What the Furman people heard was Pegues went for 39 and they lost. That is the guy to come in and step up at the point guard position, be the facilitator, be a guy who can get by guards on the offensive end, get to the basket, create space for guys like Broome, Baker Mazzara, Denver Jones. I'm excited. I think it's a great pickup. Be interested to see if they go out and get maybe a JUCO guy to come in and be depth piece, or if they just run with the three pairing at the guards of him, Pettiford, and Denver Jones. And then see what else could pop up, later down the line.
Yeah, I would say his size, the way he uses his size in games has been really impressive. But like you said, I think that there needs to be a little bit more depth at the guard spot for Auburn, just to kind of beef up that backcourt just a little bit. And then Pegues, like you said, Greg, he's going to be able to lead that offense with how experienced he is. But Pettiford should really just take notes from what he does, and then of course, Pettiford, how talented he is, will be able to replicate that in a few years.
Yeah, hopefully Pettiford's not Aiden Holloway or Johan Traoré 2.0, or I guess that's 3.0 now.
Yeah,
especially for Gray's sake.
A whole nother model.
Street. Yeah.
In the street, please, Pettiford. All right, Nathan, flipping over to Alabama basketball, sorry. You had some guys enter the portal. Graduate Max Chernowski, sad to see him go. You had guards David Cosby Jr. and then Chris Parker both enter. Chris Parker, Nathan, you said you were expecting it a little bit. I wasn't. But then you had the most questionable move entering the portal here, being wing Rylan Griffin. Nathan, what are your thoughts on good old Rylan hitting the portal? And then what he said after on social media on his live streams?
Pampering.
Before I get to Rylan, let me go ahead and address the other guys because they deserve to be talked about as well. Of course, I'll miss Matt. He's a graduate transfer, but he's been very fun to watch on the bench. I believe he got his first ever technical with like no minutes played, which was actually pretty impressive. I don't think I've seen that done before, but he's hilarious. I'm sad to see him go. For guys like David Cosby, Chris Parker didn't really fit the style of basketball Natus wanted to play. He likes the mid-range shot a lot. I watch film from practice a lot of the time. And while he's good at slashing to the rim and stuff like that, he also would take like 90% mid-ranges, which I could tell was not going to work out. And then a guy in Devin Cosby, which I thought we saw flashes from him in the Ole Miss game. And yeah. I was impressed. But it felt like he was just not comfortable in Native system. It felt like it was a little too fast paced for him. It felt like he was kind of just out of it. And when he did come into games and try to get into the offense, it felt like he was kind of left out for the most part, just because I don't think playing fast is his style of basketball. So it's sad to see him go. I appreciate him for that Ole Miss game, but we'll be good somewhere else. And then we get to money chaser Rylan Griffin, who, after saying Nate Oates was the GOAT and that he'll win a championship, and that he wants to go win a championship, proceeded to probably do the weirdest thing ever. I think we all just sat here and we got the news at some night last week that Rylan Griffin was entering the portal. We just sit here dumbfounded, like, is this real? Why would he do this? Well, we know exactly why he's doing this, because he's bag hungry. And I think we know the school he probably offered him, Kansas, you know, with their slick self, Bill Self. What a joke. And I understand this is the stage that college basketball is in, but for Rylan Griffin to talk about Alabama like he has in the past and been so passionate about playing there, he proceeds to come and talk a bunch of crap on his live streams after entering the portal, how they'll be so much worse on defense without him. Well, news for him, he was one of our worst defenders statistically this year. The dude could not stay in front of his man at all. And I get what we saw from him in the tournament, and it looked like he played good defense, but for the majority of the year, we had defensive issues because he wouldn't move around the court, because he wouldn't fight through screens. So he can go to Kansas and go ahead and suck there in the Big 12 while Houston just absolutely runs them over because he doesn't have any clue how to dribble with his left hand. But he should watch what he says about Alabama basketball. What a piece of crap. And I had a lot of respect for him too. And then he wants to come out and just talk utter crap on Alabama and his teammates who he just fought to a Final Four with. It's like nothing mattered to him now except the money. So he can go ahead and go. I'm fine with that. And to break in this other news, Nato's basically just turned to him, laughed, and got guard Chris Youngblood from USF, who is literally a better defender and a better scorer than he is. I mean, he shot, what, 45% from the field and 41% from three? He was just a more consistent Rylan Griffin and actually gave a crap. So we already got his replacement. He can go and move on. I'm glad Chris Youngblood's there. Well, I don't think Nate Oates is in the portal. I look at the Kentucky guards that are leaving. Alabama originally went after Boogie Fland, so maybe we can get him to go ahead and come. If not, maybe a guy in DJ Wagner would be a good pickup. But Nate Oates got it covered. So Rylan Griffin, bye-bye. Bye. See you later, buddy. But the rest of them I will miss.
Gray, anything to add to Nathan's Rylan Griffin spiel there?
Well, I immediately thought it was tampering. I thought it was, we all thought it was Kansas. I think we all know it's Kansas, but I don't think that's where Rylan Griffin ends up. I don't think he ends up at Kansas. I think he ends up somewhere in Texas, whether it's Texas, Texas Tech, TCU, somewhere like
what a,
that.
What a step down to get a Texas Tech or TCU.
That would be some downgrade. That would be some downgrade. But I think he was pulled out of the portal. I think that was highly illegal. And his comments just make it more believable that it's tampering. But his comments towards, so hang, yeah. Let me address his comments towards the defense that at Alabama's next year. By the way, he was by far the worst defender on this Alabama team. I watched, it was probably 7 or 8 of Alabama's games this year, completely. I watched, bits and pieces of every one of them, but I watched full games of Alabama probably 6 or 7 times this year. Every single team who played against Alabama, who had a good enough guard wing player to attack off the dribble, went right at Rylan Griffin. And you know what they did? They had success. They had success every time. Dalton Connect schooled this dude. Schooled him. Denver Jones was schooling him. It was... He has no right to say absolutely anything. His effort on the defensive end was not there outside of the four games in the West Regional in March. You know, it did get better in those games, but his effort, especially in that SEC tournament game against Florida on the defensive end, was horrific and wasn't trying. So I don't think he has any right to say any of that at all. I think the defense of Alabama got better instantly when he left, and then got better even more when they added Chris Youngblood. And speaking on Chris Youngblood, dude's a stud. Dude's a pure shooter that's going to provide exactly what Rylan Griffin did on the offensive end. Space. I think he's better off the dribble than Rylan was, and better at getting
to not to be. Spot,
I would say. But he's so much better on the defensive end. And just like Nathan said, he tries. He puts effort in outside of just those four games in the West Regional in March. Look, it was funny to me as an Auburn fan to hear what he was saying, but it's pathetic. And it shows what kind of guy he is and what kind of character he has. And good luck wherever he ends up.
You know, Gray, I was really ready to just wish him well wherever he went, but then he had to go and run his mouth and absolutely talk crap on his teammates. And funny enough, Muhammad Diabate caught him on live talking about it, and he had it too. So I'm glad. I'm glad he's gone. It's players like this that are cancerous to team success.
Yep. Locker room cancers. And not saying he was last season. Maybe he was. We weren't in the locker room, but obviously he had some animosity, whether that be paid for or not, towards Alabama and the players on the roster. And I think the Rylan Griffin transfer, like Gray pointed out, comes down to tampering. We don't know. I'm not going to sit here because we don't have proof of it and say, hey, Kansas tampered with Rylan Griffin, or Texas Tech tampered with Rylan Griffin, or Texas, whoever. But this is what happens when there's no guardrails to the transfer portal NIL. Yep. This is basically free agency now. From what we heard, a team basically went out to Rylan Griffin and said, hey, you hit the transfer portal, we'll offer you a $2 million NIL deal here. That's basically free agency. The NCAA or the U.S. government, whoever you believe should have put up the guardrails, need to put up some sort of guardrails to where this never happens, or if it does happen, it rarely happens and it's illegal or whatever. But this is just awful for the state of college sports, whether it's college basketball, college football, college baseball, whatever college sport you watch, because this dude was a key part of this team in the final four run. Yes, same thing with Caleb Downs.
By the way, the same thing happened to Janai Broome, but he told the school no, but I won't mention the school name.
But yeah, I mean, there's just it is mind-boggling to me that Rylan Griffin says all that stuff he says about Nate Oates after their loss in the final four. Then what was it? Not even a month later, he sits there and talks crap on the program, how there's no defense played. Well, news for Rylan Griffin here, that offense he played in for Nate Oates was going to be the main reason he was going to get drafted in the first round, in my opinion. We pointed out multiple times on the show, dude has close to zero bag. You watch him on the court.
You're scared to watch him dribble.
He has almost no behind the back. It feels like he has no coordination. And
he has no left hand. Invisible.
And I thought offense is perfect for Rylan Griffin, coming off the dribble, being that 3-and-D type guy. I know he didn't play defense until the tournament, but that's how he was going to get drafted to the NBA. He's being that 3-and-D type talent where, hey, you come off the ball, here you go, dish from whoever, whether that be a top guard, Steph Curry, Shea, I don't know, whoever, dishes him off to the wing and he nails a three, kind of like Isaiah Joe does for the OKC Thunder, being that 3-and-D type wing. Well, I don't know if Rylan Griffin thinks, hey, I'm going to go to Kansas, Texas, Texas, TCU, whoever, and I'm going to be the ball dominant go-to scoring option for that team. Because I'm sorry, that's not happening in your college basketball career going forward. You have no bag. You cannot create your own shot. And if you do, it's very difficult and very janky looking. So
are we not going to talk about a shot selection? Majority of the time, I'm watching.
Oh, my God, fast break.
He would just move me on a fast break. We'll just pull it. We'll just pull it. Hey, Rylan, we have 30 seconds. We need to kind of run a little bit of clock. Oh, Rylan, he's pulling it from the logo. That's not surprising because that's his shot selection right there. Has no understanding of how basketball is supposed to be played. He just shoots the ball.
Yeah, and it's not just me saying going around Griffin because he's in the portal and, you know, he's in Alabama anymore. He was good here and he sucks in the portal.
We were saying this long before.
Yeah, we were saying this long before. Greg pointed out his defense wasn't great, but he stepped up in the tournament when he needed to. But it's just always been an issue with Ryan Griffin. And I hate to see him go because he brought a lot to the program shooting-wise, but like I've all pointed out, we saw Ryland Griffin at the door, and Nato's turned around and said, okay, see you later, buddy. Good luck. Wherever you go, have fun chasing that bag. And said, okay, Chris Youngblood, what are you doing, buddy? Well, we'll give you a good offer here. Come on and replace Ryland Griffin. You're already better than him. And y'all pointed out he is. So I'm excited for the program going forward. I don't believe there's any roster spots open on Alabama right now because Mark Shears hasn't announced if he's going to the draft. Grant Nelson, there's nobody's really entered the portal as of yet. Maybe Waggy does. Maybe you see other guys enter. But as of right now, no spots left for Alabama going forward. So we'll see how this roster ends up shaking out, kind of like Auburn's. Any final thoughts for Ryland Griffin, Nathan, as we head out today?
Good riddance. Good riddance. He deserves every little bit that's coming to him. Karma is a two-way street. It will come really right back around. Like
TCU.
Yeah, I'm gonna go to. He's gonna go to TCU. I don't know where he, dude. If he goes to Arkansas, I think that'd be the funniest thing ever, dude. Because Nathan and Alabama fans already hate Arkansas, and to see Ryland Griffin, what he said on social media, go to Arkansas, dude. That home game against the Razorbacks would be worth the price of admission to see the Meta fans and the signs and everything there. we'll see what happens there. We'll keep y'all updated. That's all the time we have for today. Thank y'all for listening and watching, students of the game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.